Welcome, citizens. You're listening to New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creatives. Here, thinkers and doers always have a key to the city. The mayor is in, so office hours start now.
New Amsterdam Radio starts now. How's it going, everybody? And I was going to do my normal intro, but I just been saying the name of this episode like a billion times. That's crisp. Because our guest today is Abby Gatling, who is the owner of Crisp Communications out of Australia. And I think she gives a interesting perspective of how trends in marketing can work on both sides of the Pacific. But the reason why I'm cracking up at the idea of that's crisp, the idea of the title came from a very short-lived show called How to Make It in America, about these inner city friends that try to launch their own business. It was their own jeans business, and it was called Crisp. And so that was just kind of like how they talked about the brand. Like, yo, that's crisp. You know, it's kind of a thing. I don't know. It made me smile, and hopefully if it didn't confuse you completely, it made you smile too. New Amsterdam Radio is part of the New Amsterdam Network, New Amsterdam Entertainment Network. Learn more at newamsterdam.com. And of course, you can learn about the show at New Amsterdam on that Instagram. That's where we have clips all the time. Flippo Boyce, the mayor, hanging out. I'm actually recording this episode in advance. As I mentioned last week, I was headed to Dubai. As this episode airs, I would be technically in Dubai, even though I am recording it from the mayor's office. So I figured instead of going on hiatus or taking a break, we actually keep the ball rolling this week. Let me know what's going on with you and your projects, because that always warms my heart. I'm personally available on that X at Flobo Boys. And because we gotta do a little bit of that housekeeping, when I am trying to figure out something to do, whether I'm on a date or solo, I try to look at SeatGeek.com. Why? Because SeatGeek knows what's popping in my city and also knows how to get the best seat in the house. And now I offer you this. Use promo code FLOBITO, that's FLOBITO, for $20 off your first order. I mean, there's one thing of getting the hookup, but it's definitely getting the hookup using my name. I mean, that's like, we're like bonded. We're like totally linked. SeatGeek.com to get yourself some tickets to some cool events in a city near you. As for me personally, I'm fine. As for me professionally, always looking for the next big thing, and I hope you are too on whatever project you're working on. Now, Abby Gatling is someone that I felt instantly, once we started hitting the record, about a bond, about how you're out there swimming on your own as an entrepreneur. And I think she's a perfect example for a lot of us who understands how to start. We start to wonder what happens in month 6, month 12, month 24, of a business. So hopefully she gives you some bit of tips and tricks on how to hit that next level, second or third or fourth or fifth level for your creative projects or businesses as well. Now for my rambling, now it's time for my chat with Abby after the jump. Welcome back to another edition of New Amsterdam Radio. It is I, the mayor, Flobo Boys, in the mayor's office, hang with people who are doing the dang thing. And you know what? I want to do things crisply, right? I was perusing the interwebs. I came across the brand Crisp Communications, and I have the CEO founder here, Abby Gatling. Please, welcome to the show. How's it going?
Ah, it's going great. And even better now, I'm speaking to the mayor. That's cool.
That is a perfect idea of branding. So long story short, I ran for office here in Los Angeles. I came in dead last. Like, I just owned it. Like, I'm the mayor anyway. That's kind of...
Claim it.
So as we are having this call right now, it is early o'clock in Australia. You said it's after 8 a.m. How are you feeling? Are you in that Friday mode, or is it kind of like you still have that sleeping
enough? I think as a business owner, the Friday mode doesn't kick in until the afternoon. There's still always a pile of work to do between now and the weekend.
Right. Are you a coffee person or tea person?
I am mostly tea. I have a very British background. I am in Australia, but my parents are British and Irish. So very strong tea drinking culture, but sometimes you gotta have that coffee. I certainly do have a nice strong coffee a day.
I'm totally with you. I swear to you, it's not the point of the show, but I'm totally with you. My parents are from the Caribbean, and so I grew up really British, and they'll still drink tea when it's like 95 degrees or 35 degrees Celsius outside. But I've converted to coffee because diners don't kick you out when you drink coffee. So I don't
but it's true though. Like it, you know, where I am, we're subtropical, very hot. Drinking tea on a hot day, people think you're crazy, but it actually makes you feel cooler.
It does. It does. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know why. Hey, unconventional wisdom is pro tips. And that's why we're here today. So let's talk about the thing number one with the bullet. Crisp communications sounds so much fun to say. And I was on the internet. I was actually on your Instagram page. And I love the fact from top down, it just has an entire thematic idea. Now, was that something you came up with when you launched? Like, we have this idea, this brand identity, this look, or was it something you kind of came on and built on as you launched your business?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I've always been a very visual person. So when I decided to launch my brand, I wanted to be so very, very me. And the visuals are part of that because like your branding is just kind of your visual expression of your business. Mm-hmm. And I chose the name because I love crisps, potato chips, you know, right. I just love them. And my skills are in writing and communication. So I was like, oh, crisp communication. This is great. Of course, it's got to be pink, my favorite color. And I just find like if you have a brand, you just have to lean into it because now I get people tagging me in things that are pink. Anytime any meme comes up about crisps or chips or even my dogs, I put my dog Monty as the head of marketing on my business website. And so now people know Monty as well. I'm getting tagged in dog memes. I just feel like you lean into it, people will embrace it. So yeah. I start off with that intention of if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it fully right for me. But now it's easy for my team to pick up and run with it because it is such a strong brand.
Well, first question is a side question. What's your favorite kind of crisps?
I don't know if you have this in America, but crisp. Smith's Original, they're like crinkle cut, plain salted.
I'm gonna look this up right now. Smith's Original. Oh, okay. It looks Oh, like wow.
Crinkle cut potato chips, they're just the right amount of crunch, you know, and I just love them. And everyone knows that I love them. A healthy dose, you know, I'm not like obsessed with them. I am a little obsessed with them. But, you know, but now because it's so much part of my brand, for my birthday, I get a packet of crisps. For Christmas, I get a packet of crisps.
Yeah.
Every time I go to my in-laws, I get these crisps. And it's the power of a brand. It's really interesting.
I'm fascinated by this because so for those who don't know, Smith uses like a logo that's very close to Walker's in the UK, which is very close to Lay's here in the United States. And I'm like, wow, I'm going down a rabbit hole as you're saying this. But the other question is this about the branding aspect of it. Like, I like the fact you decided to put yourself from get-go. A lot of times when we start a brand, we try to be fancy, try to out Apple, out Amazon. There we go. What are we doing? So you decided from the beginning to put yourself into it. But how much? Like, what was the formula? Was it kind of like, it's going to be me and then tailor it as you scaled, or you like just put the colors first, the love of crisps first, the style, the fashion first, the branding type, and built as you went on?
Well, I guess to answer that, you sort of had to go back to the original, like the origin of the business. And so I started the business officially in 2019, but how it came about was that I was working full-time. I've always been a creative person, but due to weird circumstances, I went down this route for my career, which was very serious. It was management focused. I was managing teams and budgets, and I just had this very, very serious and very stressful life. And I was craving creativity. And so I was working this busy, busy job. And then I was like, I need something else. So I did freelance social media management on the side, and I taught myself graphic design. I was doing that on the side, and then it got to the point where I was enjoying all these side hustles so much that I was like, why am I not doing this as my full-time job? So I started the business after freelancing for a while alongside my full-time work. Started the business in 2019, and at that point I was like, I have been so sort of oppressed from creativity for so long, I'm just gonna go all out and just make it 100% what I want because I didn't choose myself in the past. I'm going to choose myself now.
Right.
I'm going to go for it.
Yeah,
honestly, I never actually thought, and I'm only this year really thinking about like, what is the future of Crisp? What do I want it to be? I never actually thought I would grow it. I never thought it would be something bigger than me. I was in this survival mode of being like, I need creativity. This is going to give me the opportunity to be my own boss, to be creative, unrelentlessly creative every day. But it actually has been good that I've focused so much on the brand, and I mapped out my visions really early on. I mapped out my goals really early on. I gave myself a brand guide really early on, even though it was only me. But then by the time it came around to me actually building my business and growing and getting staff members and contractors on board and all that sort of thing, it actually made it so much easier.
Oh, yeah.
Because they can access this stuff and they can get this like little insight into my brain.
Just a little bit, small.
Yeah, yeah. They don't want the whole thing. It's crazy.
Right. Well, that's actually a smart tip. I think a lot of us, we go, we just say it's us. It's A equals A. We know what it is. And then when someone goes, how do you describe it? To have that down on paper is so valuable. So if you're listening like right now, branding guides are not scary. You can start small and build on those. But you said something that really spoke to me about survival mode being juxtaposed with the creative side, right? A lot of times you think about survival mode, it's like the ramen, right? Or just making sure the bills are paid. But you were at a job which assumedly paid you a steady paycheck. I mean, it wasn't like you were like, you know, struggling on that level, but you said you wanted more. And a lot of us, we had that year, 5 year, maybe our whole lives of struggling of making that jump. So was there a moment for you when you get, no, I got to hit this creative need, I have to jump? Or was it kind of like a gradual transition?
Oh, yeah. It was gradual in the fact that I tested the waters by doing, you know, I did a free internship on social media management for someone in America. And then I taught myself a little bit. So it's gradual in that sense that I was building up the skills, testing the waters, making sure that I knew that I could do it. Mm-hmm. But and then all of a sudden it was like, no, I've got to do this now because I was being paid really, really well, but my mental health was suffering because I was in a highly stressful job, working every hour under the sun. And, you know, so I actually quit the job a couple of months essentially after I got married. And I was like, we got married, couldn't go on our honeymoon straight away because I was working. And then when we went on our honeymoon, like months afterwards, I was so tired. I slept the entire time. And and then all these things were just happening where I was like, I am letting this job run my life and I'm not going to let it happen anymore.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this. And so I was lucky enough. I came into my long service leave payment. So after working there for 7 years, and I was like, well, now or never, I'm going to just take this money. It's going to be my float. I'm going to build this small, grow it from there. But I had a nice buffer to support me because you can't go from a paid salary to nothing.
Sure. Done that. Not a fan.
Yeah. I would be back on the ramen, as you were saying. But
right.
Yeah, so it was like, it's gradual, but also sudden, I feel.
Personal question. Is your partner also an entrepreneur, or are they in the corporate America or structures?
Corporate Australia? No.
Right. Done. Gotcha. Same BS, different land shore, right?
I feel like we still say corporate America when we're over here. he is an entrepreneur as well. He is a business coach. And, you know, I come from a family that, you know, very sort of middle class, not risk takers at all. We've always been employed. We've not had any sort of like history of being an entrepreneur in my family, which is completely fine. A lot of people are like that. But Michael, my husband, his father, it was like a serial entrepreneur doing this and this and this. And he's done all these crazy things, starting from nothing and building things up. Very, very impressive. And I think that gave him the power and the strength to do that himself, because a lot of people would be too scared to go out and forsake a regular income to start their own business. And I think through exposure to him, that's given me the strength to do it myself, because, you know, you can, when you can see it around you, you can be inspired by it. But if you never see it, it doesn't even come into your consciousness.
Yeah, I guess I'm skipping ahead a bit about that. The board of trustees, right? Every person has they're on the CEO in their own life, and they have their own board of trustees. I know people from environments where they have a little less runway, whether it says, oh man, are you crazy? Like becoming a painter, you got to like get a good job. You got to go to this tool to get a good job. But when you create your own job, sometimes you'd be lucky in a supportive environment. Sometimes it's a little difficult. I guess the question I have for you is, did you have any haters in the streets? People was like saying, oh, Abby, what are you doing? Oh, baby, what is you doing? Did anyone give you that kind of negative feedback when you started off?
Yeah, I did. I certainly did have people, not from a perspective of hating on me or wanting to see me fail, but perspective of, hey, honey, I love you. You shouldn't be doing this. Like, this is not going to work. So we have some friends of ours who run a small business, and it's a tradie style business, you know, trade services. And they were saying to me, like, I'm a small business, because I work with small businesses, right? They're generally 1 to 5 people, and they outsource their marketing to me. And this lady said to me, like, we would just never pay for that. We never would have the budget for that. We do it all ourselves. So I just don't think you're going to be successful. And so I was like, oh my gosh, are you right about this? And then, reflecting on it, I was like, yeah, I say small business, but it's not all small businesses that I work with. I generally work with professional services, which are people who don't have a tangible product to sell or a tangible service, like being a trade. They are lawyers and accountants and financial planners, people with an intangible service. And they are generally these businesses who are small and they're so busy and their time is worth a lot of money. They don't want to sit around and noodle it out and figure out how to do their marketing themselves. And they don't have enough admin to put on an admin person who could then do that as well. They just want it done. They want it done well, and they just give it over to me. So it's really good to be questioned like that, I think, because you never want to just be surrounded by a sea of yes people. But no. You can't. You can't always take it on face value. You can't just go, oh God, I'm not going to do this because this person said it's not going to work. You have to do your own research, you know, do your own analysis and figure out like why they said that and what are your counter arguments to that, and then just keep going with it.
At this point of your branding, I'm sure you've come across a client where you have that consultation and you're like, oh, this is not going to work. Or maybe you have a client, you take them on, and then things change. You have to break up or fire your client. Everyone has a different way of saying that. So I guess the question I have is, like, what have you done when that has happened? And more importantly, what's an ideal client for you today if one exists?
Yeah. So, I mean, my ideal client is someone who knows they need this support, they see the value in it, and they are of the viewpoint that you hire an expert and then you get out of the way, right? Mm-hmm. That's not to say that our work is not consultative or collaborative or anything like that, but our worst clients are people who they might pay us a lot. They might not squabble their bill. They'll pay their invoices. That's fine. But every time you say something, they undermine you. They change their mind 20,000 times. They're like, oh, well, I showed this to my friend's cousin's sister's dog. And they said, and right. So you get
those
on
dogs,
this,
man, I swear.
They've got so many opinions. So you have this, like, you get in this meeting and you get on the same page with them. And then you're like, great. And you keep working on the next thing, because you always have these checkpoints in. You're like, you have your discussion, you go away, you do, say, your first kind of concept for them, you get their agreement. Then you go and you do the next thing, you build out the concept, check in. It's this whole process, right, to make sure that you're both on the same page, because everyone has different opinions. And, you know, what we think is right is not necessarily what they want. And you've got to make sure that everyone's happy, right? But when you have the thing and you agree with it, and then this thing happens and the cousin's sister's aunt's dog's mother comes back and you're like, oh God, we've just done all this work on it. So I think we have fired quite a few clients because of that. When it gets to the point where it's, I feel like I was feeling in the past with my whole career where I'm getting that heavy mental load, not feeling valued, then yeah. I just know I can fire you and I will get another client. I know I will replace that income somewhere. And right. and equally so, now that I have a team, if my team feels like that, I will back them 100%. So I will do the same for them. So if anyone is rude to my team, if anyone is undermining, if someone's coming to me and complaining about them but not having addressed and or given feedback, it's done. Like right. that's not the culture I want. I want to be very strict about our standards of treatment.
Oh, wow. You got me two questions with that one. One, I bet the first time you fired a client must have been nerve-wracking. I would assume so, because I went through almost like an anxiety to fire my first client as a wedding or mobile DJ. And two, how does that dovetail with your management style? What kind of environment do you establish to make sure that if a work employee or teammate is somehow disrespected, that they can come to you and that you know that this client is worth to be fired?
Yeah. You mentioned breakups before, and I don't know about you, but certainly, obviously, I haven't broken up for a while. I am married, thankfully. Touch wood.
Yes, queen.
I love you, Michael. but I do remember, you know, those tumultuous teenage years or college years or whatever. You realize this person is not the right person for you. But I'm quite an optimist, you know, so I go, oh, but they brought me a cup of tea this morning, or, oh, but they're so funny. Or, you know, like I would always kind of find these little nuggets of like, oh no, maybe we can still keep going out. And so you'd like, it'd be this like long torturous thing. We're like, this is not right for me. And then you finally break up with them and this weight's been lifted and you're like, oh, why didn't I do that earlier? I feel like breaking up with a client is exactly like that. And my first one was exactly like that, where I was like, ah, they're disrespecting my boundaries. They're calling me on a weekend. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're disrespecting the way I want to be treated. They've sent me a rude email. You know, and I let these little things happen because I didn't back myself to say, I actually don't need this client. I will get another client. Yeah. And so the first one was torturous. Now I'm just like, bam, bam, you're fine.
Yeah.
So now jumping to the team thing is that it's hard to establish a strong culture when you are working remotely. We all work in different areas. It's certainly not impossible. I think we have done it. But you have to be fully committed to it. And I think one of the key things is that you have to communicate, just be talking all the time and be really open with feedback both ways. So, you know, my team are located across Australia. We have a couple of ladies in the Philippines as well. And so we have multiple touch points. We have our task management system where you can type in questions and do videos and stuff about the actual tasks or the projects we're working on. But we also have Voxer, which is a voice, like walkie-talkie style app. Mm-hmm. So I can send them things and be like, hello, how are you today? Or, you know, and I can say things. But we also rely really, really heavily on video. So I use Loom for our videos, screen recording. So they give me, say, for example, someone gives me some work back and I just don't want to go in and change it because I want them to sort of know what is being changed and why and what's my thoughts behind it. So I'll record my screen and I'll talk them through, like, thank you for this. Now here we're going to change this to this because of this reason. And they can see my face in the corner so they can get that, you know, it's almost face-to-face. They can look at it. It's very visual. And I think just through that constant talking, because you can't learn through osmosis if you're not working in the same, you know, team. Like if you're working next door to someone, you're picking up all this stuff just like on the fly. The way we're trying to find all these ways to kind of emulate that and just kind of talking our way through, like, in our team meetings, for example, I always give the update and I go, oh, this client's coming up, this client's going off. And if I ever get rid of someone, I go, this client has gone, this is a good thing, that because they didn't respect our timelines, they were giving us stuff too late. They didn't pay their invoice on time 3 times in a row and didn't actually let us know. And, you know, like it was very, very clear about why we're keeping clients and why we're getting rid of clients. So right. Yes, all these ways to try and just keep the communication up in any which form. So, yeah.
I just love that. Yeah, they didn't pay us, so get out of here.
I'm happy for people. Like, I know everyone struggles with money, right? Yeah. And there is, especially if you're a business owner, like it goes up and down. Cash flow is a huge thing. However, if someone had said to me, hey, we're going through this tough time, a massive client's left, I've got a big tax bill, blah, 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 blah. And they said to me, I'm sorry, I can't pay this on time. I plan to pay this on the 29th. Is that okay? I'd be like, yes, that is totally fine. But when you don't pay your invoice and you don't say anything, and then you still are giving me more work, it's like, that's not really cool, man. Mm-hmm. It's just about communication. Everything is about communication. Crisp communication, you could say.
You said it.
See what I did there?
Yeah, I like it. Someone who escaped from LA, you know, someone who escaped from the corporate scene and are building a team now, what do you do to keep the morale on the positive side? I mean, granted, it's impossible to keep it positive all the time, but any tips or tricks there for someone who may be having a small team, a budding team in their businesses?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways of doing it. You do have to think of it a bit laterally when you have a virtual team, but we just try and emulate as much as you can, like what a regular team environment would be, you know, checking in each morning on Voxer or asking people what they did on the weekend, sharing photos with a little caption or whatever. But a fun thing that we do is that, so we have a all-in team meeting once a month that we go through our regular things. So I give my updates about the teams, like what's happening in the business. And then everyone gives their updates about, you know, what they've been working on, what's coming up. They share a win that they're proud of. And they also share a challenge that they're working through. And we can sort of brainstorm it as a team then and there in this team meeting. And it's really nice because I don't always jump in with the solution. Someone else goes, oh, have you done this? And da, 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 you know, it's lovely. It's like this really collaborative thing. And then what we also do is we have two other things. One is a team training. And that is not just me delivering training to the team. It's each individual person we rotate around and you deliver training on something that you know is relevant to the business and that is coming up. And in the beginning, Joanna, who is our administration assistant, was saying, you know, what do I have to train you on? You're the founder. And I was like, you've got so many things to train me on. You've got all the skills and experience that I don't have, different skills and experience. And so she was really nervous to do that, but her training is awesome. She's given this really cool, interesting training. Everyone does a PowerPoint. They speak over the top of it. Practical. It's wonderful. And then, so that's lovely. So like everyone, doesn't matter who you are in the team, you still get an opportunity every couple of months to do training of your choice. And then the last thing is we always finish with something fun. And again, that rotates around. So we've had people do trivia. We've had people do like charades, random things that you had to figure out, like how will it actually work on Zoom? Because it's got to, you know, you can't physically be there. You can't do Pictionary or something like that. Well, you might be able to do Pictionary. I'm not sure.
Right. Can't play Duck, Duck, Goose. I got it.
Yeah. That's it. Like, duck, duck, duck.
Right. That's pretty cool. Fun is kind of open to interpretation. And so you might have like different flavors of fun, I guess, depending on your team.
Yeah, absolutely. And because there are, you know, there's cultural differences as well between Australia and the Philippines, slight cultural differences. It's wonderful the flavors that come out when you give people free range and they can just do what they want. And they have not been disappointed in anyone in the team. Everyone has just exceeded expectations.
Man, that is really cool. I think that's a lot of solopreneurs struggle with how to build up a brand with a team. Not saying they don't want to. I mean, okay, there's some that don't want to, but the ones that do and want to scale, it's always kind of like, do I go too hard and being baby in them? Do I go hands off? Treat everyone too much like entrepreneurs and they lose the reins? But this seems to be a bit of a balance you have to extract to make sure that there's a common goal. You guys are usually hitting it. And you're not doing it like slaving away in a coal mine or something like that.
No. Yeah. And it's about like finding what what works for you. But I guess because my previous career was management, I knew what I wanted and what I didn't want. And I think that's really important to know. It's almost more important to know what type of manager you don't want to be when you're coming and doing this yourself. Whereas you think about the worst managers or the worst teams you've been in. For me, there have always been ones where you feel really claustrophobic. You feel micromanaged. You feel like you're not seen, you're not heard, you're undervalued. And all of that, I would never like any of those descriptive words to be uttered in the same sentence as my business. That would be failure for me, is if any of those things were linked to my business.
Yeah, it's funny because of all the corporate jobs I had, the worst boss I had was in entertainment. And he was definitely the kind of guy that would scream at you Monday to Thursday and on Friday buy you pizza and say, hey, look, I'm a great boss. And like, oh, if you say you're great, sir, if you feel that confidence, that's all good.
Definitely had a boss like that. And it's like, you can't buy me off with pizza or a bottle of wine. Like, I still remember what you did yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. People do not forget about trauma. New Amsterdam Radio, I got to say, thank you so much for being on the show. Before we get you out of here, though, I want to say that we have a couple questions we ask everyone on the show. Kind of a fun, kind of a lightning round if you're down to play with me. Abby, you down?
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
That's cool. If you said no, it would have been awkward. I'm like, well, that's the show.
Yeah, no, see ya.
I know. So we ask everyone who's an entrepreneur, do you believe in days off? And if so, what do they look like?
Yes, days off are so important. My days off involve doing nothing. Okay. Making sure my brain doesn't have to work on a day off.
Okay. What is it, like movies, walk in the park?
Lying down, just lying, sleeping, taking the dog for a walk. Pottering in the garden, moved house recently, doing some DIY, anything that just kind of helps you refill your like energetic cup. So you're ready for the next working day.
I envy those who can do that. I say that like, oh yeah, I'm going to watch movies, but I'm always on my phone, like refresh. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Without your phone, you've got to try, really hard to not do it with your phone because you might think like it's relaxing, but it is. Yeah. It's not. Your brain's still firing away. And you might, for me, I manage like 25 different social media accounts. So I'm seeing all this work stuff. I'm like, oh gosh, no, got to put the phone away. Oh, it's hard. You're going to do it.
That's another pro tip. Learning all the nuggets of information this week. Everyone collects something. What do you collect?
Oh, what do I collect? I've inherited a couple of nice little collections of things. My mother... she gave me her collection of old coins, money coins, that I think her father gave her. So I have this like collection of coins, and some of them are even like Romanesque coins. They're pretty cool. Yeah. I haven't contributed to that because money's not that interesting anymore. I feel like everything used to be way more quirky. Right. And another thing that I have and I do contribute to is my grandmother gifted me her collection of buttons, and she was a real thrifty person that whenever she something she couldn't repair it, any piece of clothing she couldn't repair it anymore, she'd always snip off the buttons and she'd put them into this jar. And so she had these amazing buttons, and so whenever you needed a button for your pants or your shirt or whatever, you'd go to this collection, you'd look through all the goodies, and it was just beautiful. She passed during COVID, and I feel so grateful for having these buttons because every time I look at them and I put them on a shirt or something, I'm just like, oh, Grandma, you're the best. Yeah, Thank you so much.
Yeah. That's cool. I guess that could be like very, very small, but very, very significant at the same time. You know what I mean? It's pretty cool dynamic.
Doesn't take up a huge amount of room in my house, so that's great.
I'm going to reach my travel dream this year. I'm going to Australia in February. But what is on your travel bucket list? What do you want to visit on this planet?
Oh, yeah, this is hard because I love traveling. And there are so many places in the world I'd love to see. But my number one value is family. Like, first and foremost is family. And going back to the tea thing, my family's over in England and in Ireland. And so I'm like, oh, I'd love to go, you know, see Machu Picchu. But then actually, I really want to see my sister in Ireland. So I've got this, like, I'm being torn in two directions. If I could do it all, and my plan is to eventually be able to travel and work with Crisp all over the world, and then I'll get best of both worlds because I won't be limited for time. But I'd love to go Machu Picchu. I went to Mexico last year. That was amazing.
Wow.
I want to explore more of America, actually. My bucket list is to go to New York and just live, just drink it all in. But I am lucky because, my sister and my mother's side of the family all live in Ireland. My brother is in LA, so he's a great one to visit. And then my father's side's all in England. So we've got a few people around the place that I can crash on their couch. It's great.
it tickles me you say that because, like, I live in LA now, but I'm from Brooklyn. And as big as that city is, to me, it's like going back to the farm. So it's like, oh, yeah, New York, whatever. But I forget that it's always in movies and TV shows, like, it's a famous city.
I think it's funny that, like, even things that are filmed in LA, like, you know, Friends, for example, topical at the moment, I was like gobsmacked that actually it was filmed in LA.
Yeah.
Set in New York. I'm like, what? You lied to me through TV.
I just love how the streets in France had like two people on the sidewalk at any given time. It was a desolate city.
That's not accurate.
Yeah, it's not. One more for you. What is, in your opinion, one of the best gifts you ever got from a fan or a coworker or someone on the professional side of things?
Oh, yeah. I'm a fan of gifts, but not for getting things, but I'm a fan of gifts for the thoughtfulness. So the best gifts I've ever received have been completely random and out of the blue, and you're just like, aw. That's nice. So, you know, every now and then, like, our clients will give us, you know, say a gift for Christmas or something like that. But, you know, and it's like, that's really lovely. But then when I actually launched my own podcast earlier this year, James, who's in my team, sent me a bunch of flowers saying, I'm so proud of you. Good work. And I was like, that made me cry.
Oh, that's great.
You didn't need to do that. But that was, you've really just filled my cup.
Yeah, I know we say things like give people their flowers, but actually giving people flowers is always a good gesture. Flowers are amazing. I'm a tulip guy myself. And I say that from Brooklyn.
Okay, so. Oh, yeah, tough guy.
Yeah, beer, sports, tulips. Yeah, that's what. Abby, this has been so much fun. Thanks for being on New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creatives. Now, if someone wanted to connect with you or with Crisp or even know about your podcast, how'd they go about doing that?
Yeah, I reckon probably just jump onto my website. It's crispcoms.co. I've got all the stuff to do there with our business, but also the podcast as well, which is Creativity Uncovered. And, you know, I'm always happy just to spitball ideas about marketing and always keen to hear from other entrepreneurs because I love this community of entrepreneurs where you kind of share and help each other and we can all bring each other up. I love that.
Great. Can I borrow like $5, please?
Yeah. I'll put it in the mail.
Fair enough.
Yeah, the Australian boys work there.
I try, all right? I try. She said, help other entrepreneurs. $5 to help me out. I want you back in a future episode down the line. I will love it because I love to see how your brand evolves over time.
Thank you so much. This has been really fun.
Thanks so much for listening to New Amsterdam Radio. Learn more about the show at newamsterdam.com. That's kneamsterdam.com. Until next time, this city is yours.